What's up, my drinking comrades, and welcome to the Beverage Click podcast, dedicated to discussions surrounding beverages with an Asian perspective. I'm your host, Sean Oh, co-founder of the Beverage Click Academy, which is based in Singapore. Now, this is a monumental episode, as it is our first podcast episode, and to commemorate that, we have a very special guest today that's actually also responsible for our jingle, intro, and outro, a very talented musician himself. I've known him for quite a while now, ever since the conception of the Beverage Click 6 years ago. He's a fellow Beverage Click alumnus, highly decorated, if I may add, and he's an advanced sake professional recognized by the Sake Educational Council of Japan. He's an international kikisakeshi that's part of the SSI, and a certified sake sommelier conferred by the Sake Sommelier Association. He's a director of a premium sake distribution company that's been featured in publications like the Singapore Tattler, The Edge, China News Asia, Mr. Otaro himself, Eugene Wong. Hey Eugene, how's it going, man?
Hey, hi Sean. Very happy to be here. Thank you very much. This is quite exciting. This is a new experience, so thank you.
Yeah, believe me, it's a new experience for us as well, because it is our first podcast, and you know what we're trying to do here is really trying to spread the word of beverages, and one none other than, you know, true to our hearts, which is Japanese sake. So, you know, we're gonna keep it casual, and what's gonna happen is that we're gonna have a couple of discussions on a few topics that are, well, I wouldn't say rather burning, but it is quite relevant in our current climate. So first and foremost, we're going to talk about sake trends, okay, in Singapore. Sake trends in Singapore, and you know, you being a kind of like a linchpin in the sake industry in our local scene, I'm sure you know quite a bit, and you know what's actually happening in on the ground. So what do you think in terms of sake trends? What's actually happening in the market? What do you think is popular? You know, let us know of your opinion.
Sure. First off, I don't think I'm a linchpin.
Kingpin.
No way near to that. I'm still very new to the market, very small. I try to do what I can do, but you know, still a long way to go from some of the big boys out there. You guys know who you are. You know, to be honest, I've been doing this since about 2016, 2017. So that's when we started the business. You know, that's what I can tell you. You know, the changes I've seen since then, which is about, what is it now, six years. I think when I started, it was very clear that there were a small amount of brands that customers were interested in. It was a very small handful, and a very very, to a certain extent, a very similar taste profile that everyone is looking for. And what I can say is, at least in the last 3 years, we've seen a lot of experimentation, a lot of adventure from consumers that are willing to try different things, different flavors, different styles. I think probably the single biggest thing would be that when we first started, everyone was only interested in Junmai Daiginjo. And that was, you know, I think that's how we all started, myself included. But these days, I find customers actually telling me that they actually prefer, for example, a Junmai Ginjo, or they actually prefer something that has a little bit more texture, a little bit more flavor, and, you know, a little bit more funk. You know, sometimes that's actually what they're looking for. And I think that's a really interesting movement or trend even. And I think we can attribute that actually to some of the restaurants that themselves are more adventurous with offering these things to their customers. And I think a lot of it actually really depends on the staff themselves, you know, whether they're a sommelier or just a waiter or the restaurant manager, you know, who are actually willing to tell customers, you know, try this. This is different. You know, you really might enjoy this.
Yeah. Well, it's good that you brought those points. And, you know, I actually have two further questions that I'd like to expand on that. One would be, in terms of restaurants, you think, is there a particular style that is tacked on to maybe a fine dining international restaurant or something that's a lot more localized? Will these styles be continue? You know, will they continue their popularization, if there's such a word? What do you think?
To be honest, again, very small sample group, and anecdotal to be fair. I think a lot of the sake that ends up on a sake menu in a restaurant really depends on the chef and owner, or at least whoever is helping to put the menu together.
Good point.
Because it really revolves around their personal flavor and taste. Because if they enjoy it and they like it, they will push it more often. You know, they will help to move the sales because it benefits them as well. You know, they enjoy it and they think that it pairs well with their food and their cuisine. So I think that would be probably a higher priority, more than anything else, because customers come to their restaurant with a particular style of food
expectation
and expectations here, and then they put the sake together that will match that food, and at the same time it's because, you know, they like it. So of course, you know, most people would have a wide range on their menu or try to appease, you know, most customers, but I see that lean towards you know, what they enjoy, and then of course they're excited, and then they're very excited then when they like it to introduce these sakes to their customers.
Yeah, I agree, and I do see a lot of fine dining restaurants these days that are starting to pound on more and more sakes on the menu. Mm-hmm. You know, to do sake flights, so that's very encouraging. But that being said, I mean, fine dining ultimately is, well, if you could imagine, it's a little bit more light and delicate. And to give a little bit more context to our listeners, broadly speaking, you know, we have things like your very clean, dry, Niigata styles, Tanrei Karakuchi styles that, you know, are very fairly light. And you have those very aromatic fruit bombs, you know, that are very juicy and sweet. And also those very quirky and funky styles. Now, do you think will styles like the quirky and funky ones work for fine dining?
Probably it will, but again, it's got to be in the right context where it's introduced and the guests and customers are ready and expecting, okay, this is going to taste different. This is not the sake that I'm familiar with or that I would normally get. But the good thing about fine dining, or at least most fine dining situations, is that they can introduce to them by the glass, or, you know, it comes as part of a tasting or a pairing menu, where the sake is paired with a particular dish, and they're ready and expect it, and whether they like it or not, you know, it's one serving. Mm. It's a little bit more difficult when somebody has to buy a bottle, and you know, there was this big joke with one of the local somms. You know, sometimes customers order, and it's 720 mil of disappointment. So, and then it's hard to recover from that.
Yeah, I totally appreciate that fact. That's true, and I think largely it's also depending on what you've mentioned, the sommelier's job to actually, you know, to make the right kind of recommendation. But you know, yes, in fine dining restaurants, I think that will be far lesser because you already have a sommelier that's on site. But you know what? Let's move away from such a niche trend, because in fine dining it will be a very different story altogether. What about the broader, or the, you know, the larger population? What do you think the current trend is? Are we moving towards a cleaner style, or do you think we're moving towards the other spectrum that's a lot more funky and fruity?
I think. It's I wouldn't say funky and fruity, but I see, at least for my portfolio of sakes, I see a lot of interest in the ones that have a little bit more flavor and texture, not necessarily a fruit bomb in that respect, but not the super clean and clear. I mean, there's definitely a market for that, but there is more interest now in the ones that have texture, a little bit of story, and even just you know, a nice generic way is that there's a little bit more interest now in omachi compared to
something more flavorful,
the very
right?
classic Yamada Nishiki flavor that a lot of people are very used to. I see a lot, I actually get a few customers going now, oh, this is omachi, I'd like to try that. And that's something that I never saw, you know, 4 or 5 years ago.
Right. So there is a shift in the market, I suppose. You know, I think where did you start with sake? Was it more clean, you know, or was it more flavorful?
So, no, it was actually the excitement started with Nama.
That
massive explosion of flavors. That's when I went, wow, this is something different. And that was the very first Nama I had ever tasted.
Right. So, yeah, so I think Nama actually kind of gets to people in a good way, obviously. And I think for most international people, like, you know, generally people outside of Japan, they tend to appreciate that quite a bit. Yeah, I recall the fact when I was visiting as a sake student, you know, and visiting breweries, and nobody was spitting because it was all Nama. It was so hard to get out of a proper Nama out of Japan. Yeah, I was you know, gulping every single drop. Yeah, so I think I can fully appreciate what you're talking about. To give more context to the listeners about what a clean style would be like a Niigata style sake, and its popularity was more associated back in the was it in the 80s?
I would say late 80s. There was a big marketing push from Niigata as a region, right? So it was sake, it was their rice. They were pushing. I think there were some of their food products as well.
Yeah,
there was a whole prefectural push to increase the profile of Niigata outside.
Exactly,
of Japan.
Exactly. And again, because of technology, you know, with the whole vertical polishing that was being refined, so that kind of became a style that defined a couple of decades. I personally, if I'm going to contribute to a little bit of the topic, I think what I do see the trend right now is more of those Murakanama Genshus. It tends to be that tends to form the preference of most consumers here. Do you have a lot of Murakanama Genshu in your portfolio?
Muruka Genshus, yes. Right now, I don't have a lot of Nama for logistical reasons.
Yeah. Logistics is a bitch. We're allowed to swear on streaming. You're quite right. I think again we probably have to do another separate podcast for topics and subject matters like what is a Muruka, what is a Nama, what's a Genshu. But that is the one that to look for, you know, to look out for in terms of big and bold. It kind of reminds me of like your Napa cap, you know, back in the day. Yeah. So okay, I think those are a couple of good points for sake trends that are in Singapore right now. Do you think, in terms of e-commerce, what would be? I'm not sure if how involved you are in e-commerce, but which type of sake will actually move a little bit more? What do you think?
Right. We've got a site and that's been doing, you know, pretty all right since COVID started. I think what has worked out well on online is actually a little bit of a mix of honestly of photography and write up, mm-hmm. because most people we're not there to talk to them to introduce the sake to them. So it's really about how we introduce the sake to them online. Explaining the story of the background of the sake, of the brewery, I think all that contributes to the purchasing journey and the purchasing interest of the client. And of course, you know, we try and present the sake as best as we can in terms of visual, photography and design. So I think that's quite of the bit of an interest that has helped. And one of the successful things that we've implemented in the last couple of years is actually the introduction of packages. So we've put together, you know, two or three bottle packages together, and I think that helps consumers to it helps them to make a decision a little quicker.
Was this with help by the sake brands, or you know, it's just an initiative on your own?
Yeah, no, it's something we did on our own. I mean, it started with it started with putting the same brand together. For example, you know, we'll put the Jumai Daiginjo and the Daiginjo together. Obviously, we give a package price to the customer. So it started with that, and then we tried putting several different brands together. And so the feedback that we got from customers was they actually enjoyed. They enjoyed it for two reasons. One is it kind of took their decision-making away from them. And secondly, it was also nice because what we had done was, for example, a certain range was to have three different rice. So all the same grade, but three different rice, three different regions. And from that, they could have almost their own little tasting flight at home.
Yeah, I agree. It's is that age-old saying, you know, no choice is a good choice, right? In a way.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I can fully appreciate that. So, do you think that the F&B scene has recovered? I mean, we're in 2022. How long can this last, right?
I don't know if recover is the... If it's recover is the appropriate word to use. Just from observation, I think it's not as bad as it was right at the beginning of 2020. I think for majority of the people that have managed to survive, it's not all doom and gloom. I think, or at least I can speak for my customers, is I think they've identified their customer base. They've taken care of them very well, and in return, their customer base, you know, has rewarded them with their loyalty. And I think the interesting thing is actually the change of the customer behavior for the restaurants, at least. I think they're coming in earlier now. It's not uncommon for people to come in at like 6 or even 5:45 to have a couple of pre-dinner drinks and then actually start their meal at 6:30, because two things, you know, some restaurants you've got to kind of leave by about 8 or 8:30 so that they can have a second turn, or otherwise they start early because they know that by 10:30, you know, most restaurants will close. Once they can't serve alcohol, they close. So by 10:30 close, so that gives them that good 4 or 5 hour window to get a nice comfortable meal in. Whereas in the past, people will walk in at 7:30 or 8 because they know they can sit till, you know, 12:30, 1 o'clock and not be an issue.
Yeah, that is quite true. Again, for foreign listeners who are listening in, the current regulations that we have in Singapore is that you have to end your service or, you know, your drink service by 10:30. So it's not now. And we just had a revision in terms of the number of patrons that you can have at the table. That's 5. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's 5. So we're taking baby steps, but I think, you know, we're slowly improving. Well, the situation can be far better, but, you know, with the recent, and this is now that I'm actually bringing this up, that the surge in Omicron's numbers are just doubling up, tripling up. I think last night was what, 16,000?
16 or 19,
yeah. So yeah. So we're in the five digits now. But the good news is that most people are not getting very sick. You know, so I think that's a silver lining. Okay, that's good to know. The only reason why I'm bringing that up is also because I'm just looking at the recent stats, and I'm sure you have those stats with you, Eugene. By export volume, in terms of value, right? Singapore actually has kind of improved quite a bit, and we are at 4th right now, and just right, hot on the heels of Hong Kong. So I think that's quite encouraging. And if we looked at export amount, best improved in terms of percentage, again, we're just behind Hong Kong, and Hong Kong is leading the way at number one, we're number two. So I think this is all very encouraging numbers. I do see that Singapore probably would be the one to watch for in terms of a sake battleground, you know, in whether it's in terms of distribution, more competition for you, Eugene, I'm pretty sure. But yeah, but how do you see that? How do you see that taking form in the next, say, 2 to 3 years?
Well, definitely better choices, better sake for our Singapore consumers. So, you know, I think I speak for the industry that, you know, we want to present the best possible experience, both in terms of product and quality of product, to our customers, both through restaurants and direct. So I think all this is definitely good for the customer. So happy to contribute and be a part of that.
Yeah, okay, well, that's a very positive take on it, you know, at least you don't see it as competition. I do actually have one other topic that I would like to bring up, because since we're talking about numbers,
sure.
Do you think parallel imports are hurting the market?
Oh, that's a real tricky question. I don't think. Well, I mean, it's good for the consumer because you get a wider range of products. That's stuff that normally wouldn't be here. So in that respect, that's pretty cool. But the other question would be obviously the question of provenance, handling, how well it was taken, how many people are there in the chain. Mm. And by the time it gets to the final customer in Singapore, sure, you've got a bottle, it looks nice, it's cold when you got it, but we don't know, we have no clue where it has been and how it's been handled between the brewery and itself.
Yeah.
So I think that's where it gets a bit tricky, and I think the difficult thing for a brand or for a customer is at that point where you receive this bottle that you may have paid a significant amount of money from, there is that chance where you open it and it may not meet your expectations.
Might be disappointing, right?
Exactly. Something may have gone wrong. And it's very tough at that point for you to think, oh yeah, someone along the line didn't take care of it. So, but because the first thing you think is, oh, no, I tried brand X. I paid X amount of money for brand X and it tasted horrible. So brand X is bad. I think that's where it gets tricky and that's where it gets difficult and to a certain extent not fair to the brewery.
Yeah, you're right. I think
it's taken out of their hands.
Most consumers would not have that education in terms of, yeah, it's probably parallel import and nobody really took good care of it. I'm going to give that brewery another chance. Exactly. Yeah, and you know, and on the flip side, most breweries, from what I've heard, don't actually know how the products are actually, you know, getting into market.
Right.
Yeah.
Rakuten.
Yeah, that's one channel. I mean, at the end of the day, this is just a conversation, but you know, who are we to criticize on that matter? It's a good point that you actually brought up that it's positive that the consumers are getting sakes readily, but no, without provenance, that throws everything up in the air,
right?
There's a lot of other things to consider, like brand dilution and, you know, brand representation. Is this what the brand is, you know, offering?
Right. And of course, I mean, unfortunately for certain brands, by the time it's, you know, handed through multiple parties and it ends up at your table, it's now several multiples of price of what it originally was,
yeah,
which makes it very tricky.
Yeah, it's tricky. It's good that you recognize it. I think it's good that all of us recognizes it. But I think the fact of the matter is, do you think this will be eradicated in time to come, or do you think this is something that's here to stay?
Wow, how do I say that we're not getting in trouble?
well, it is streaming, but you know, let's try as be as diplomatic as possible as we can.
Diplomatically, I mean, let's be honest, it's not illegal.
Yeah.
So no one's breaking the law. So if you take it from that respect, you know, mind your business, right? I mean, look at our automobile business in Singapore.
Yeah, exactly. Right? I was going to bring that up.
It's celebrated by our economy, right? So. The PI economy is encouraged in Singapore, so it's unfair to look at one product and say you can't do it, another product you can. Again, from a legal perspective, but from, you know, from a purity of a sake fan, for someone who works directly at breweries, who puts in a lot of effort to ensure that our customers get the best product possible, it gets hard to champion, you know, the parallel market, because knowing again the amount of effort and trouble that we put into to keep our products in a good condition and to get them to our customers at a reasonable price. I think it's also very difficult to manage expectations when, for example, I can offer you brand A I'm just using an arbitrary number at $100, and someone else is selling brand B at $300. And if you don't know either of them, one, the $300 must be the better one, of course, right?
Yeah,
because
I mean,
it's easy to equate quality with price.
That is true, but since you know, back to the topic of PI, and would you expect a PI product to be lower than the one that's from the original distributor?
Not for luxury products, which I would classify PI sake as under.
That's true. Yeah. Well, that's a good point. Yeah, it's a very hotly contested topic, I think. And if I was to give my two cents, I don't think this will ever end. It's a sad reality. But if there was any chance that such a practice is being reduced, it would take everyone's efforts, I think, even largely on the breweries, and to be firm on certain export channels and you know, if they're doing any form of tracking. Maybe for Sake's case, it hasn't come to the stage of where wine has. I'm not talking about in terms of popularity, I'm talking about in terms of problems that it might face. For example, fraud. Mm-hmm. Right, I think a lot of people don't tend to see that issue with drinks fraud.
Not yet.
We're not yet, exactly. But once sake comes to maturity, you know, it comes to its own, and people start to see value in it, and fraud becomes an issue, I can totally see, mark my words, I think this might actually manifest itself in later days. I'm not sure what I see in my lifetime, but you know, we never know. Do you think that would be an issue?
I think if the education is out there to the market, where it's important to pay attention to, again, to provenance, to knowing the I'm not sure the correct term, you know, the chain of transport and logistics from the brewery, and if the customer can be assured that at least they know where the sake has come from and where it's been, I think that would be very helpful. As far as I'm aware, I think there are a couple of companies that are experimenting and trying to implement a system like this, and you know, hopefully this can come into play at some point and help. At least we give the customer the confidence to know that, okay, this product, whichever brand it is, this product it has a clear provenance. We know where it's from, right? And this second product, we don't know. And then the customer can make that decision on which one they would rather purchase, and let that decision be on the customer.
Yeah, I think you're quite right. But for them to make that decision, I think they still need to kind of be informed and at least educated to a certain level.
For sure.
Yeah. Well, it is encouraging. I mean, if we were using our school stats, more and more people are actually getting themselves equipped with that kind of knowledge. So hopefully more and more people would be a little bit more aware Do listen to this podcast. You know, it will help. It'll help boost up your knowledge, I suppose.
I hope so.
Yeah. And I guess
listen to me.
Well, we have to listen to him.
Listen
because,
to Sean.
Well, you know, we listen to all the professionals out there. I think on that note, I think it's a good time to probably wrap up our first episode. You know, Eugene, it was fantastic having you on show, and this is a bit of a. It's a bit of a catch up since our time on this future Sake Future Summit, right?
Was it a year and a half ago?
Yeah. And we did that over.
It was online. Yeah.
Yeah, it was over Zoom. I think it was quite fun, you know, to be part of a project like that. And now we're kind of doing our own thing. So hopefully we expect you to come back more often.
If you have me, yes.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. We know you're a busy man, so we'll try our best to get you on back here in the recording studio. Okay, so if you like to listen to more of such drinks content, please do remember to follow and subscribe to our channel. And we all look forward to seeing you at the next episode. And remember, a drink always tastes better when the company clicks. Kanpai.
Kanpai, and smash the like button.
Yes, smash the like button. Are we allowed to toast now? Well, we can't really toast in this context. But yeah, we'll see you soon. Take care.